walking briskly toward the part of the complex where some of the main dolphin research was carried out by one of the groups of scientists. Dean grinned and spat out into the blackness.
Off to see a slut.
Dean!
What? What'd I say?
You know damned well. There's no excuse for calling someone a slut.
What if they are?
Don't try to turn this into a joke, Ryan.
Her eyes were narrow slits of fiery emerald.
It's about respect, and he's old enough to know how to show it.
Hear, hear.
Anyway, how do you know where he's going? You mean he's sneaking away to go meet up with that little Miranda?
Sure, he can't keep away from her. He's like a bee in a pot of honey.
Doc also stood.
I believe that I, too, shall take myself off for an evening's constitutional.
Can I go? Can I, Dad?
No.
Why not?
The reason we're here is because there seems a good chance that this Redjack Yovel and his chillers could be coming this way real soon. They won't send us a messenger to say when they're going to attack us. Could be tonight, early morning, tomorrow, it could be never.
So it's probably safe, Dad?
No such thing as probably safe, Dean. Either it's completely safe or more likely it's not safe at all.
The boys sat down again, shoulders slumped. Mildred and JB exchanged a glance and rose together.
Early night, I think.
Sure. Might be we won't be too late, either.
Doc walked through the Institute compound, the soft sand silencing the tapping ferrule of his sword stick. Every now and then he skirted the golden lakes of spilled light. It was a beautiful night, with a sky like an inverted cloak scattered with diamonds. He stopped and looked up at them, finding that his eyes were suddenly brimming with tears.
Oh, my dearest dove. My darling of love and comfort. Oh, my Emily.
He tried to calculate how long it had been since he had last seen his wife, and held her tightly in his arms. But the confusion of the two cron jumps had addled his brain, and he swiftly lost count. All he knew was that it had been an infinitely painful time of being apart. His feet led him in the tracks of Michael Brother, following the teenager toward the section of the Institute where Miranda was doing her work on speaking to the dolphins. It was no great surprise to the old man to realize where Michael was heading. Like Dean, he'd spotted the growing passion of the ex-monk for the attractive young woman. The door was half open, and he paused outside it, squinting through the gap into the brightly lit interior. Doc had been there several times, finding himself fascinated by the experiments in communication, so he was familiar with the building and its number of small tanks. At first he couldn't see Michael, though he could catch the faint sound of conversation. Then he saw the flicker of shadowy movement against a whitewashed wall. The young man was sitting in the far corner, his feet dangling into the shallow pen. Doc could just see that Miranda was standing in the water, leaning her elbows on the edge close by Michael. There was a narrow chipboard passage down one side, with a couple of makeshift offices. Once there, Doc would be close enough to hear without being seen. The idea of eavesdropping brought a malicious glint to his roomy eyes, and he tiptoed out of sight, creeping along until he was within 8 feet of the couple.
You've got to make up your own mind, Mike.
I do.
That's not the way it seems to us.
Ryan's the man in charge.
Doesn't make him some sort of god, does it?
No.
Doc couldn't quite catch the woman's reply. It was drowned out by the noise of her climbing from the tank.
You say I don't owe them anything? But I'd probably have died a dozen times over by now if not for Ryan and the others. You have to see it from my side, Miranda.
I don't think that you see it from your side, Mike. How can I?
I can't betray them.
I'm not asking you to do that.
You are.
No, I'm not. You know I care. I've showed you, haven't I? This afternoon when we came here and I...
To his frustration, Doc couldn't hear the rest of the sentence.
Of course it was good, but I did it for you as well.
Only when I pulled your hair to make you get down there, Mike.
Well?
Don't look so miserable.
Then Miranda's voice was too quiet for Doc to hear more. But she seemed to be urging Michael yet again to do something. Something that he appeared reluctant to do.
No. If we fight the pirates for you and win, I couldn't go against them.
But then that one-eyed bastard and the redhead and the shootist and all of them, they'd be a threat to the Institute, wouldn't they?
No.
Hidden behind the thin partition, Doc could almost taste the doubt in Michael's voice.
Yes, they would. But if that happened, then you could help us against them. If you did, you and me could...
Yet again, Miranda's soft voice dropped beyond a whisper. But Doc also caught another sound. It took precious little imagination to deduce what sort of persuasion Miranda was using on the inexperienced teenager.
Theophilus, I believe that the time is now appropriate for you to reveal yourself from behind this arras.
Doc clattered along the passage, emerging once more from close to the front entrance of the building. Michael jumped as though he'd found himself to be sitting on a red ant's nest, his hand fumbling at his groin as he tried to adjust his zipper. Miranda turned to see what the interruption was.
You!
None other, my dear.
He made her a low bow, so florid that his chin nearly brushed the damp concrete.
I was just passing by and saw the light and heard the voice of our young companion, Michael. Is all well, my boy?
Yeah, Doc, it's real hot pipe. Good, fine, no problem at all. How long have you been there, Doc?
Yes, just how long have you been listening in on our private conversation, Doc? A bit like spying, isn't it? A lot like spying.
Not at all, my dear young lady. I have only this moment entered the building, but what sort of conversation could be so secret that you needs must accuse me of being some sort of snoop? Not, I trust, some kind of guilty conscience.
Fuck you.
Hey, there's no need for that, Miranda.
I can't begin to imagine the cause for such stern anger from so pretty a face. It isn't as though this innocent maiden was attempting to suborn you from your friends and your duty, is it, Michael?
Suborn? I don't know
what... To suborn, Michael. To seek to persuade another to perform a wrongful act. I suppose that means something like, let us imagine, trying to encourage someone to betray their friends. You take my meaning, Michael.
Yeah, Doc.
Perhaps we could stroll together back to our quarters, Michael.
Sure. Feel sort of tired.
Good night, sweet lady. May choirs of angels sing thee to thy rest.
Ugh, like I said, fuck you, Doc. And fuck you too, Mike. Fuck all of you.
After making slow and gentle love together, Ryan and Christy fell into an easy sleep. But in the middle of the night, Ryan found himself trapped in a bizarre dream. He was swimming deep beneath the ocean, in water so crystal clear that it was possible to see for miles. Also, he could breathe under the water, as though he had gills like a fish. There was a large white chair, crusted with coral and lumps of rose quartz. In it, beckoning Ryan toward him with his battered armalite, was the traitor. Before he could swim closer, Ryan woke up. It took him some time before he slipped again into sleep. It had been snowing for nearly 3 days, banking up against the walls of the line shack that had been home to Abe for the past week. Abe had hoped to reach the coast before the great blizzard came swooping down from the Cascade Mountains to the east, but the pewter-colored clouds were too fast and too close for him. For a few hours, the wind had shifted direction to the west, bringing the bitter taste of salt onto Abe's lips, offering the brief expectation of making it down to the great Pacific Ocean. It couldn't be more than 20 or 30 miles away, down through a series of maze-like valleys. It wasn't a part of the world that Abe knew. There was a vague memory of riding there years ago, in War Wag 1 at the trader's shoulder, but he couldn't pin any fast details to the blurred recollection. There had been a city on the coast that he thought had been called Seattle, which had been an endlessly rambling series of ruins. It was Abe's hunt for the traitor that had brought him this far north. Following rumor, myth, legend, and gossip, the trail led him ever farther into that bleak and lonely country, beyond the frontiers of what had been old California. The trail was already marked with graves and with a number of corpses, some of them the responsibility of a darkened figure carrying a battered armalite, a stooped and gray shadow with the remnants of a hacking cough, who was always moving on. For Abe, the Chimera was always around the next corner in the trail. Only a week before, he'd spoken in a ville to an old man.
He was here yesterday, and he left a brace of Sekmen kicking in their own blood and guts. Baron put a Jack Price on the stranger's grizzled head. But there was no rush to join the posse to try and hunt him down.
Abe had been so close. But there had been an earthfall that had blocked off one of the high trails, forcing him to detour 30 miles to the east before he could pick up again on the tracks of the man who might be the traitor. And now it was the snow.
Oh,
fucking snow!
Abe carefully picked crystals of frozen snot from his drooping mustache, flicking them at the clay-lined log walls of the small cabin.